Welcome back. Welcome. I don't know why I always do that. Welcome to... This is The Breaks, man. I'm fresh.
I'm Confucius. Before we get started, you know, I want to say Happy Mother's Day to everybody. We'll record this on Sunday. Yes. It comes out on Monday.
First and foremost,
we're recording today's Mother's Day. You know, if anybody listens to the podcast that has not received Mother's Day love and greetings, you are getting it now from The Breaks. We here to take over the airways. No matter where you're from or where you stay. It's been a very interesting week. So, you know, before we even have a chance to even just ignore the elephant in the room, we have to address it to get it out the way. Got to talk about your favorite rapper, Tekashi.
Why do you always pin this guy on me as my favorite rapper? Like, I feel a little hurt by that.
If you haven't noticed, every time I hate somebody, I always say
they're
your favorite
artist. Yeah, I know. I get blamed for it. Like, what's up with that, bruh?
And he's from New York, so
No, I'm from here.
Your musical taste is different.
Nah, but, I like Mad South stuff. You're not putting this one on me, man. That's not the New York I like. That's not the New York I like.
Apparently, a lot of people like him from wherever, because Tekashi 6ix9ine, the famous Brooklyn rapper who was one of the most popular rappers, last year?
Yeah, 2019.
For trolling and starting beefs and doing a bunch of stuff he shouldn't be doing. Went to jail, told on everybody in his crew.
The whole crew.
Got out of jail because of COVID-19. Got out of jail early. And he made his triumphant return to the internet on Instagram. Like, he dropped a song, Gooba? Gooba?
I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Very colorful video. And he also went on Instagram Live. It's the first time anybody heard him speak since he's been out, since, you know, he went to court and jail and all that. And the man racked up 2 million viewers on Instagram
Live.
Didn't he
break the record on, like, Instagram for Instagram Live?
Yeah, broke the record. It was by a Latino artist who had, like, I think, like 500,000, something like that. And he broke it by 2 million. He had 2 million views. People were just interested to see what he had to say. We love a train wreck. And I didn't watch it because the antics are just so much of a circus. I was kind of curious to see if he had, you know, learned anything since his time in prison and things he went through. But nope, he's still the same trolling person he always was. Same person.
I didn't even know he was live, like, until it was over and until people were posting about it. Like, that's when I found it. And I think you sent it to our group chat. And it was a lot of discussion about him throughout the week, period. When the song came out, him going live, things he had to say on his live. There was a lot of discussion about him in which I wasn't going to partake in any of it. That's not my realm of expertise. I don't play like I know the streets or like I'm some hardcore street guy. I know some rules, and those rules that I know, I'm clearly aware of, and I just stay away from that element because that's just not me. But a lot of people had a lot of stuff to say, especially a lot of people that I know don't live that life.
And we're very adamant about not speaking on street stuff on the show because, one, me and you are not in the streets, and two, like, you know, some street stuff just doesn't need to be spoken about. And with his situation, a lot of the main thing people kept going to was that he told on his gang. Yeah. And you know, he's a rat, he's a snitch, and all these different things. And, you know, he got on his live and explained why he did it, because, you know, he felt betrayed by them and they were stealing money from him and doing other things to him. And, you know, for me, I'm not going to even go into, like you said, the street politics of it. For me personally, it's just so negative. All of it's negative. Like, he's striving and thriving off negativity. It's not even just so much the street aspect. It's the fact that he made a career off engaging in confrontations with other rappers for fame and for attention. It's not so much that he makes this great body of music that is just undeniably good. It's just that he just thrives off controversy, and it's just very hard for me to be like, oh, this is cool, I'm really interested in it, because he's made it very known that's what he does. And it seems like now that he's out, even all that he went through, he still is on that pathway, which is extremely upsetting and sad, because so many people are tuned into it. But I think it's just because of the controversy. And he knows that he couldn't come out and be this reformed, changed guy. He knew he had to go back to doing what made him successful in the first place.
I think he knew that, in the sense that he knew when he got out, he still was going to pursue music. And he knew he couldn't, like you said, be this overly reformed guy. Oh, I learned my lesson. I don't want to have anything to do with the streets. I'm not a gangster anymore. He couldn't come out and do that and still try to pursue music. I think he knew he had to come out and still be Tekashi 10 times more than what he was before he went in.
Which is interesting because if you read his court case, he seemed to be very contrite and sympathetic to what he put people through and the person he was.
He's a great actor.
But I guess, of course. Yeah, he said, I guess, try to get out of it. But, you know, it's unfortunate because, like I said, is that it's not music-based. And he knows that. Like, he knows he has to continue to be this person. And, you know, everybody says, like, oh, you know, he has a reason for why, you know, he told and all that. And, you know, he was around before we had the break, so we've had to chronicle his career mm-hmm. from the beginning. And, you know, there's a lot of things that he did that before, you know, his group or gang, whatever, you know, put him in a position he didn't like. He was doing things with them that he shouldn't have been doing, which goes back to what you said earlier about not being from the streets. He wasn't from the streets, but he wanted to participate in street things that got him in trouble. So it's kind of hard for him to be like, oh, well, I told they did this to him. Like, well, you were doing it right with them at one point. Yeah. So
it was all it was all
when the cops came knocking. Yeah, exactly. When the cops came knocking, then all of a sudden it's, oh, God, these guys are bad. And also with him, it's people are saying, well, you know, he's going back to this career, a great career he had. Like, yeah, 2 million views. I mean, 2 million people tuned in on his Instagram Live, which is great, but the man's got to live looking over his shoulder the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Apparently, when he went on his live, he was outside filming it or at some points of it, taking pictures. I guess one of his neighbors took a picture of him taking pictures and posted the address on Snapchat, which alerted, you know, the police, because he has police
he's in witness security, I believe.
Yeah, and they had to move him. So apparently he jumped from Airbnb to Airbnb and...
Yeah, that's a horrible life to live.
I don't like being broke, just like the next person doesn't like being broke, but I don't want to live a life where I have money and I have to constantly move around and look over my shoulder. That's not even worth it at that point.
That's going to make you, that's going to drive the funds down quicker than just blowing it. I'd rather just be broke.
Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if his record label told him, like, you can't change up who you are, bro. Like, in order for us to keep funding this lifestyle that you now have to live of security at 24/7, we need you to continue to be controversial to draw attention to yourself to sell this music.
I'm sure 10K Project had a similar conversation, somewhat of a conversation like that with him, because they profit off of that. So I'm sure they kind of egged it on.
You know, people try to do this whole, like, oh, this is bad for hip hop. And I mean, it's not good for it. You know, for me, I just look at it the same thing like wrestling. I get the entertainment ass. I don't participate in it. And I don't want to have anything to do with it, but I get why other people will. And, you know, most of his fans are online anyway.
Yeah.
But,
like I said, I saw the conversations as well about this is not bad. This is not good for hip hop. And my whole thing was, and I said it on Twitter, if we stop giving attention to stuff that's unwarranted, we wouldn't have to have these talks and these debates about it. Once we see somebody like Tekashi and he come out and the information about him comes out and we continue to support it and whatever else happens after that, within the culture, that's on us. We can't be mad and sit up and say, oh, well, that's bad for hip-hop. Well, we had our chance to snuff it out, and y'all chose to support it. New York itself has been, in my opinion, been clamoring for so long to have somebody at the top that when this kid came and he was doing numbers and he was charting on Billboard and he was getting all these views and all of these streams, they were just happy to have somebody that was just reigning, that was just sitting up there at top and that just seemed like they couldn't be knocked off. And that kind of fit the mold of what New Yorkers feel like, you know, New York rappers should be, this hardcore gangster. And then when they crumbled, everybody got quiet. You heard mad rappers talk about, are we rocking with the kid Tekashi? I'm from Brooklyn. He from Brooklyn. Then it got quiet when he went to prison and he started telling on everybody. And it got quiet. Nobody wanted to rep him. And DJs coming out that had interviewed him coming out saying, well, we won't be playing his music. Why you won't play it now? He was playing it before. You knew his stuff was controversial before and it wasn't going to end well for him before. And he was egging it on. So why not egg it on now? Like, now y'all got a moral compass in hip-hop. But y'all didn't have that beforehand. It came out that he was a sex offender. We kept pushing that.
Yeah,
we kept pushing that. Then everybody wanted to bring that up. But y'all don't have the same energy y'all got for R. Kelly. Y'all was trying to mute R. Kelly and shaming people for playing R. Kelly music, but y'all not doing the same thing for this. I seen dozens of people online over the week talking about, I like the song. I like his new song. I like his music. He entertaining. But if I sit up and I play The Greatest Sex by R. Kelly, I'm going to get shamed. But I'm not going to get shamed for playing this kid.
It's funny you went to the greatest.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying. Like, hip-hop sometimes hold that mirror up against itself, and when they start hollering out what's killing hip-hop and what's not good for hip-hop. Now, we kind of helped propel him, man. We helped him.
We did.
As in the culture. We helped push him to where he is. We was excited. People was excited and pushing him and egging on all of this and entertained by all of the beef that he was starting and creating. But now, all of a sudden, it's bad for rap. Nah, man. I'm not with that.
No, you're 100% right. Because Tekashi took on, he became a caricature of what he thought a street rapper should be. Not because he came from that, not because he is that, just because he felt like, I need to do these things, the face tats, the over-the-top antics. Like, these are things I need to do, you know, the gang affiliations. You know, I have to do these things in order to be accepted into hip-hop.
Right.
Instead of coming at it from an angle of, I just like rap and I'd like to be able to put words together, I'm going to be this type of rapper. He felt like he had to do all these things in order to be successful. And he got in too deep with the wrong people, who actually are from that life, and it all blew up in his face. And you're right, hip-hop did help elevate him. And like I said, I saw the same thing you did. DJ said, I'm not going to play his music. Yeah, that's a lie. DJs, look, okay, I'm a DJ. I don't want to play his music. I never want to play his music. I never liked it. But I got a lot of requests for it. So, I mean, you can put a foot down and say, hey, I'm not, like, for instance, I don't play R. Kelly. But R. Kelly doesn't have that many songs for me to have to play anyway. Most of the songs are slower. If I'm downtown on, you know, DJing at 12 o'clock, I'm not going to drop an R. Kelly song. I don't want to hear that. Ain't that type of, it's not the type of atmosphere, but Tekashi makes club records. All his records are club records. And so all that, I don't want to hear. And also a lot of his fans are younger.
Right.
So a lot of people who consistently go downtown all the time like Tekashi. Yes, these DJs who are in their mid-30s and 40s, yeah, they don't want to hear that, but they weren't going to listen to it anyway, no matter what he did.
Right.
But unfortunately, yeah, his music's still going to get played. And I mean, it is what it is. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I'm not playing because he, you know, he told on his associates. I'm saying, man, there's a lot of people in this building that probably have told on their associates. Like somebody said, y'all telling y'all coworkers to get extra break time. So don't try to throw out this moral compass now.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
For like, telling.
And we and in hip hop we've praised and honored and made movies about known in federal informants, and they've been praised throughout the decades. So like let's stop all of this, bro.
And that's not to say that people that do tell, you know, cooperate with authorities who do illegal things and cooperate with authorities get less time or upstanding citizens, but it's just like one of those things where this ain't Goodfellas, bro.
Yeah.
Y'all don't care as much as y'all say y'all do. So like I don't respect it, but I don't respect a lot of things other people do. I don't respect Arby's. There's a whole lot of them still for some reason. But still different things. I don't know why I keep seeing Arby's. I never see anybody inside of them.
Somebody eating them. One of the bigger things that happened in this week was a very somber thing happened this week that took over the royal rap internet and hip-hop internet anyway. The sudden death of Andre Harrell, the founder, executive of Uptown Records. He was also a rapper in the 80s in the group Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The man who is famed for giving Diddy his start as an intern at Uptown Records. Uptown signed the likes of Heavy D and the Boys, Al B. Sure, Christopher Williams, Jodeci, Mary J. Blige, Biggie early on. So many people at Uptown, man. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, there's certain people in genres, and this is, you know, Andre Rale's not the only passing we're going to speak on, obviously, but there's certain people in genres music that, had they not contributed the way they did, the genre might not be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You can make the argument that had Andre Harrell not started Uptown and not hired, you know, Puff Daddy as an intern in college, the trajectory of hip hop might have been different. At least on the East Coast, it would have been way different.
It would have been way different. We wouldn't have got that bad boy sound and flash and flair that we got from Puffy and all that. And like, we probably wouldn't have gotten like the great songs from Mary J. Blige that we got.
Well, you're Andre Harrell and you bring Puff Daddy into Uptown to intern and you put him in charge of your Mary J. Blige's and your Jodeci's, and you allow this young kid to influence their look and sound that reflects the college life he was living, which in turn takes, you know, hip hop and R&B out of the new Jack Swing era and brings into the hip hop R&B era that is still kind of prevalent to this day. You know, you have Mary J. Blige doing these, you know, lovey-dovey songs over these hardcore hip-hop beats. You have Jodeci dressing in baggy jean suits and Tim's because of Puff Daddy's influence.
Facts.
And you have, you know, the Heavy D's. You have, like I said, the Soul For Reals. You have the Al B. Sure's because of Andre Harrell. And like I said, it's an argument to say that had he not been involved and done what he had done, the trajectory of hip-hop might have changed, because these are big artists and the roots of stuff that he created influence culture still to this day.
I totally agree.
As of this moment, Diddy hasn't posted anything about him on his Instagram. So I said, Diddy must be really going through
it. I'm sure he is.
That's his mentor.
Because even a lot of stuff, even today that Diddy was doing, Andre Harrell was like still right there working by his side. Like even with Revolt, I know Andre Harrell was still sitting there by Diddy's side. A lot of the stuff, the projects that Diddy did. When he was doing the making of the bands, Andre Harrell was there like helping him out do that. So I'm sure Diddy is like, man, like going through it and doesn't know what to say or how to express what he's feeling in words and on social media at that.
Also, somebody else who passed away, somebody who definitely changed the face of music forever, Little Richard.
Man, the king.
The king, the innovator of rock and roll. Little Richard, of course, it's not really much to say. If you don't know who Little Richard is, then I question your love for music. The man had the Rolling Stones and the Beatles open up for him when he went to go tour overseas. He helped Mick Jagger. It's credited Little Richard for helping develop his sound and his aesthetic on stage, the flamboyancy and the screaming. Like, I don't know. It's really hard to just, if we're talking about Andre Harrell's involvement, you know, helping push hip hop and R&B to another level, it suffice to say that if Little Richard didn't exist, it wouldn't be a music industry. There's an argument kind of for that.
There's definitely an argument along like him, a Muddy Waters, a Chuck Berry. Like, if we hadn't had those gentlemen, like, we wouldn't have rock and roll. Like, we wouldn't have an entire genre because a lot of what they did was rock and roll at the
time.
It's the
skeleton of it, yeah.
And has inspired, like you said, the Beatles, the Mick Jaggers, and so on and so forth, that we have gotten the Elvises, the Jerry Lee Lewis's. A lot of what Jerry Lee Lewis was Little Richard, the flamboyancy, the loudness, the very vibrant songs and the piano riffs. Like, that was Little Richard, and nobody said anything. Yeah. And Little Richard was very vocal about how he was an architect, he was an innovator of rock and roll, but nobody ever gave him his credit for it. And nobody ever credited, like, black artists weren't credited for that sound.
Yeah, for that sound. And, you know, a lot of the black artists at the time had to take a lot of hits, and, like, physical hits, like, financially, reputation-wise, in order for other artists who stole their sound or emulated it to have massive success. For Little Richard, though, luckily for him, he was always very vocal about his contribution to it. You know, he didn't kind of sit back and was like, oh, well, you know, as long as they say something about me. And Little Richard would openly tell you to face. No, I did. I did being R&B. Mm-hmm. I mean, rock and roll. That was me. It was all me. His famously, the Grammys, when he had present that award, and he told him, he said, the winner is me. Y'all ain't never gave me nothing.
Y'all ain't never gave me no Grammy.
Which at that point in time was true. He never got one. But I think, like, a few years later, they gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award. He even said it before, like, so, you know, it was an older interview in the 80s. He was like, you know, Prince, I love you, but I was wearing purple before you were born. So that flamboyancy, his taking those hits, especially as a black artist in those days, being that flamboyant, took a lot of flack. Like, you know, it's cool now, but back then in the 50s and 60s, nah, that wasn't
a man.
Well,
man
is
born in 1932.
Facts. But yeah, you know, condolences to everybody, Andre Harrell's family, condolences to Little Richard's family.
And I woke up this morning and saw, well, this is, we were recording on Sunday, so when y'all hear this, it'll be Monday, but I woke Sunday morning, I'm sure everybody heard the news that Betty Wright had passed away.
Yeah, she had been sick a while. Yeah. I know Chaka Khan had put out.
They come in threes.
Yeah, anyway. Betty Wright, I mean, yeah, Chaka Khan had put out that Betty Wright needed her prayers because she was sick. It was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So she passed. You know, shout out to Miss Cleanup Woman, Betty Wright. Yeah, man.
To all of those, to those three legends, this has been a very somber weekend for music.
We're taking a quick break. Be right back.
But yeah, moving on. So last night was another Versus.
Yes.
Jill Scott and Erykah Badu.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to tune in? It was 3 hours long. It was the longest one.
No, I did not tune in. I jumped in for like a quick, like maybe 5-10 minutes, and then I jumped out.
I'll be all the way honest with you. Love Jill Scott, love Erykah Badu, especially Erykah Badu. Jill Scott's music is not my ministry, so I don't know that much of it. I know the hits.
Yeah, I know the hits. I'm not the album cut Jill Scott guy.
So when I, you know, every time I kept trying to tune in, I was like, I don't know the song. Like, Erykah Badu would play, you know, Next Lifetime, and Jill Scott would back door. This song, track number 4 off my first album. I'm like, I don't know what track that is. It's hard for me to jam to this. And everybody comments like, yeah, this is my song. I'm like, it's a long walk yet. So, but it was dope to see it because there was a lot of praise for, you know, black female writers during the course of their live. And the one thing about the live, the verses that are so dope to me is the stories that go with them. And so they were telling a lot of different stories about their music. Once again, I jumped in and out because the story doesn't have the same impact with me if I don't know what the song is.
Right.
But, you know, it was dope to hear that. And like Erykah Badu explained, that Other Side of the Game was about being the drug dealer's girl. Like, because you say most time when you hear stories or songs about people in the streets, or, you know, selling drugs, whatever, it's the man's perspective. Says she wanted to write a song from the woman's perspective, which if you listen to the song, you knew that already.
Yeah.
But, and the video doesn't help, but starring a young Andre 3000. Yeah, that was just, you know, dope to hear the stories. And it was funny because Erykah Badu had a projection of Bruce Lee behind her the whole time.
Yeah, she was like filming, and she was like projecting movies or video clips of Bruce Lee, which I thought was dope.
That was dope, yeah. And Jill Scott was just sitting there with her incense and her teas going. I was like, hey, man, you know, it's a dope battle.
Looking
really
very,
dope battle.
Everything was looking very zen-like.
Facts, facts, facts. Somebody said, somebody tweeted after watching that live, their skin felt more clear. I was like, I bet. Afterwards, Swiss Beatz and Timbaland, who were over the verses, announced that the next one, next Saturday, is Ludacris and Nelly.
I'll be tuned in for that one.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. See, a lot of people are downplaying Nelly. I'm like, y'all not, how old are y'all?
Man, it's a lot of people who were born when Country Grammar came out and didn't discover Nelly, I guess, until now. And the same with Ludacris.
Who do you think is going to win that one? At this point, they still do winners?
I don't think so. I think the people kind of say who won, but I don't think like Swiss and Tim like really care, or the people doing it really care about a winner.
I mean, like even people, I have people still say, hey, you know, I watched you in Fresh's battle and I feel you won now. I was like, I don't, nobody cares. It's not that serious, bro. We were just having fun. It wasn't that serious. But yeah, Ludacris and Nelly would be a good one. I think Luda can beat him. Only because I think Luda had a longer range than Nelly. Nelly's going to run out around like 10 or 11 songs.
Yeah, I was thinking Luda more so because I know more hits from Luda probably. And I think Luda's album run was a bit, his discography is just better than Nelly's.
Yeah, he had like, what, 4 or 5 albums straight that were just like number ones. And yeah, and Nelly had 2 or 3, I think. Country Grammar, Nellyville, and Sweat and Suit.
And Sweat and Suit was 2, was a double disc.
Yeah, that was his 3rd release.
Yeah, was it? Really? See, look, didn't even know that. Thought it was like his 4th or 5th. Didn't even know he only had 3.
He's going to play that stupid Tim McGraw song. I'm going to turn that live right off. Like, oh, I hate this song.
It's over my head.
I hated that song. That song crawled so that Old Town Road could run.
I thought he was tripping when he did that, but I was like, man, I guess, man, sucks. Get your money, bro. I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking it at all.
Me and you have been talking about doing other verses.
We have.
And before we speak on this, we do not have a date set yet. Luckily, we didn't select next Saturday because Nelly and Ludacris. But so we're doing 98 and 99
yes.
for our next verses. You're doing 98 and I'm doing 99.
The end of
that
a
is
decade.
Going to be, that is going to be a tough one. Because like we talked about, with 96 and 97, I knew going into it 96 had the upper hand. So it was on me to lose. With 98 and 99, I have no idea. No idea. This one, I'm gonna have to really sit down and like really, really, really research.
Same, and really be so strategic with what I play and stick. I think when me and you talked about it earlier in the week, you was like, I'm gonna just have to just stick to my guns, stick to my game plan. I'm gonna have to do the same thing with this. Just make a plan and then stick to it and don't deviate from that, or not to deviate from it too much.
I think also just have more faith in my playlist. I think, you know, the playlist I made for 96, I was confident in it, but when it came time to, you know, do it on the live, I was like, I don't know. Now I'm not as confident as I should have been. But, you know, with 99, there's so many songs. Like, I tell you, when I started doing the simplest research on playlists, there was 2 separate playlists for 99, one for hip-hop and one for R&B. Mm-hmm. Like, 96 didn't even have a playlist when I was trying to do research. So,
which is weird, but I guess.
Yeah, I know, right? And I think when we were doing 96, 97, I found your 97 playlist, but it was all condensed. Both genres were condensed into one.
Yeah.
So, but this one's going to, I definitely think, going to be more of a slobber knocker.
This is going to be a barn burner.
This one's going to be. I might be more nervous with this because I was like, man, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what way to go. I was going through songs the other night and I was just like, I don't know. Like, it's a lot. I don't know how to like decipher this or like what to do here. So I'm going to have to really sit down and think about this one.
It's even more interesting about those 2 years is that the shift in music, because 96, 97 were dominated by Biggie, Tupac. And then you have the the Jay-Z's and Outkast in those years, but they were kind of getting overshadowed by that music. Now we get to 1998, 1999, Outkast is running the South. 1999, Jay-Z is running hip-hop. Yeah. You know, it's like, so it's like the DMX is coming to the picture. Cash Money comes to the picture. It's like 96 and 97 helped set up 98, 99.
Definitely, I definitely agree with that.
Because that's when we finally get from under the dark shadow of the deaths of Biggie and Tupac. So now you have hip-hop in more of a, I don't want to say celebratory form, hip-hop and R&B, but more into the dominant force it is today. I think it was those 2 years mixed with 96, 97 that helped hip-hop become the dominant force.
I can
in terms
definitely
of like
see
sales,
that.
Money, but those are the 2 years that really set up. That's when you got the $1 million videos. You know, Big Pimpin' came out.
Yeah, the big budget. I mean, Big Pimpin' was
terrible
for having the $1 million budget, and BET did the whole uncut thing where they showed the behind the scenes of them in the Bahamas at Carnival on the yacht and all of that. So like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think so these years, there was more opportunity to get away with deep cuts in 96, 97. 98, 99, it's all going to be just
all hits.
All top 40. It's going to be all hits. It's like, that's going to be just all. So that will be a fun battle. I probably won't drink as much because I need to kind of focus on this one. I don't want to. It's going to be one of those battles where everybody's going to be like, you could have played that. I'm like, I know I could have. It's just so much. And also, I think, too, is more rap because when we did 96, 97, it was a lot more R&B than I anticipated.
98, 99 but, definitely brought the rap. Definitely brought the rap. It's going to be very, very rap heavy. And this time around, I don't think we'll be as dictated by the flow of it, by the people watching. Like when we did 96, 97, a lot of people were like, no, keep with the R&B. I like the vibe. No, stay right there in the South. Stay with the South stuff. And I think we kind of catered to that. I think when it comes to 98, 99, we just letting the hits off. And like a lot of people are going to say what we could have played. Like, yeah, it's a lot. I could have played that if I didn't. Or it might be getting played. It's a lot to go through here.
In 96, 97, what was the biggest Southern song? Make Him Say Un,
which I didn't play.
Yeah, I know. See, that's once again, you know, like you said, I do agree that we were probably more dictated by the comments and who was watching because they wanted to hear like deep cut Southern songs that only we knew down here, like Pimp the Pen and Southside were like Texas, Louisiana songs.
Yeah.
But you get to 98, 99, that's when Juvenile Back That Thing Up comes in and then Bling Bling pops up. And
those are going to be hard to beat.
It's like, you know, you got all these huge, then of course Jay-Z, Big Pimpin' with UGK. There's like these huge Southern songs come out in 98, 99. So it's like, yeah, no more deep cuts. And then once again, Outkast, Aquemini, 98. So that's when Outkast became Outkast.
Rosa Parks hit, and that was a huge record.
Huge song. So, yeah. It was great years, man. I'm excited. Like I said, going in 96, 97, I knew. I was like, I can pull this off if I just stick to my guns. But 98, 99, I don't know. Like, if we do a poll about it, it's going to probably be more of a toss-up.
Probably so.
We can move on to our first segment of the show.
Yeah.
Unpopular opinion with Mr. Fresh himself.
I'm ready today. My unpopular opinion today is inspired by The Last Dance, the 10-hour Michael Jordan documentary that ESPN has been airing for the last 3 Sundays.
I was thinking of the movie Save the Last Dance, my bad. What?
But it's a conversation that I had saw before this documentary was being aired and before it was even announced that it was coming. Jordan in those first 3 finals didn't really play anybody. There's an entire argument that the competition when he won in 91, 92, and 93 weren't as stiff as they possibly could have been. And like the Lakers in 91, that was an old Lakers team. A lot of people say that was an old Lakers team. The very next year, Magic Johnson retired and came out and he said he had HIV. Granted, Magic Johnson was still playing at a high level, but he retired. Like he wasn't in his prime. He was no longer in his prime. And Jordan had beat an old Celtics team with a Larry Bird on it. So it was like, it was just like that wasn't the best Laker team that he could have went up against. And the following year, he played Seattle in the finals, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, 2 of the greatest players to ever play in the NBA. But a lot of people argue that that's all they had. that's all Seattle had was Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. And the Bulls were sitting over there with a Michael and a Scottie. Granted, they also had Bill Cartwright, who didn't do nothing. But a lot of people say, you shut down Gary, you shut down Sean. You kind of got that game won and that series won. And in 93 was who? Phoenix, which a lot of people argue without Charles Barkley, Phoenix was trash. Which I disagree, because Kevin Johnson was a raw basketball, but was one of the greatest point guards to ever play. And Dan Marley wasn't no chump. He just wasn't good enough to hold Jordan. But a lot of people argue that without Charles, that Phoenix team is trash. Had Charles not got traded from Philadelphia to Phoenix, that Phoenix would have never touched the finals. And so the argument goes that those first three championships, the competition wasn't as stiff as one would have imagined that Jordan would face, especially the way the myth and the lore of Michael Jordan people make it out to be.
So. Okay, yes, this turned to a sports podcast, but yes, okay.
That's just my unpopular opinion, man. It's an argument I've seen floating around on the internet, and I just decided to put it out there. It's not one I personally prescribe to, just one that I choose to present.
I mean, hey, you know, I mean, yeah, Jordan fans will jump on you, but yeah.
I'm sure they will. All righty, well, let's get on into this wisdom that we are about to receive on this Confucius Says by Mr. Confucius Jones.
So, yeah, mine is just simple. It's just, you know, Happy Mother's Day.
That's cheating.
I mean, what else there needs to be said? You know, your mothers are a very special thing for all of us that still have our mothers in our lives. So, you know, honor, cherish them, especially the ones that help raise you up, you know, were there for you when you needed them too. Because mothers can always sense something being wrong to you, sometimes more than you can sense in yourself.
Always.
If you have a wife that you have children with, you know, praise them. If you have grandmothers, if you have just anybody that with children, a woman that's with children, you know, show them praise, not just on a Mother's Day, but just any day in general. Being a mother is a very hard job. Mothers physically and mentally go through more sometimes than men.
And emotionally. Men.
So, you know, to go ahead and give them their flowers while they're still here. And that is my Confucius Says.
This week for Local Song of the Week, we have CP Looney and his brand new song, Introvert. In 2019, CP Looney released his debut album, The Rebel Tape. Now here is CP Looney with Introvert.
Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones. Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/TheBreaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown. Production support provided by Art Levy.